In 2006, Albert Park College in inner-city Melbourne was closed after enrolments plummeted. A group of determined parents rallied and convinced the education department to give the publicly funded school a second chance. The old buildings were bulldozed and a new school began to take shape. In 2010, Stephen Cook was appointed principal of the new school, which at that stage had no buildings, furniture, staff or students. 11 years later, Albert Park College was voted Australian School of the Year. Stephen Cook has 4 decades' experience as a public school teacher and principal and has won 2 prestigious awards for excellence in education. And he's written a book about the journey with Albert Park College. It's called From the Ground Up. Kia ora, Stephen, and welcome to 9 to Noon.
Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about Albert Park College.
How does one win Australian School of the Year?
It's a tremendous challenge, and I think it's a combination of great academic results, but also a real focus on making sure that we're developing great young citizens. So if you can get that combination right, I think you end up with a really tremendous tremendous school.
I'm really curious on the criteria, because right now we're having a debate again about curriculum in New Zealand and what it is, I guess, that equates to a rounded equation. People talk about the basics, the essentials that children need in order to succeed. But also we talk about the importance of developing them as people, as a group of people. And what are the components that were determined to add up to our great school, the School of the Year?
Well, I do think I often reference this in terms of it's about what's in the head and in the heart. And what I mean by that is that, yeah, sure, we have to develop the high demand, high challenge learning environment. We need to prepare our kids for the future. So we need to be innovative, creative, and challenge them. But equally, we need to think about the sort of values we inculcate in them and to make sure that they end up being fine young citizens. So it's really about looking holistically at how we prepare them for the future.
So where were you at when the original school failed, in inverted commas? Where were you at in your own career?
I was previously a campus principal at an inner city school, Williamstown High School. And at that school, we built the first 5-star green school in Victoria. So that was a very exciting point in my career. But the challenge of building this school from the ground up was too enticing to resist. And I love the community. I walked and listened to the community, and I love their values. I love the fact that they were passionate about creativity and the arts and the environment, and it just felt like a tremendous fit for me.
Take us back to 2010, or perhaps even a bit before, and what had happened to the original school?
Well, the community had lost confidence in the previous school. Less than 6% of local kids were attending the school. And so it had simply been deserted by the local community. And so it was quite a sad state. So the state government chose to forcibly, or not forcibly, but they chose to close the school and rebirth it, so to speak. So that was the state that was the situation that it found itself in around 2006. And I was appointed in 2010, and that's when we began the process of rebirthing the school, if you like.
So where did all those kids go? Was there flight to neighbouring schools?
Yeah, there was a flight to neighbouring schools, and in particular into the private school system. There was a lack of confidence in the school that was here previously.
Can you describe the public school versus private school dynamic as it is in Australia?
Yes, well, in Australia, there's quite a high percentage of students and an increasing amount that go into the private school system. And so there is this sort of dynamic where many middle-class families are making that decision rather than attending the local public schools. But what I'm pleased to report is that that is reversing. There's some great examples, particularly here in Victoria, of the government investing in quality public schools, and we are seeing a regeneration of commitment and passion for public education in Victoria. So And I'm proud to be part of that drive, if you like.
So inner city Melbourne, and was this in a lower income part of the city? Could you just describe the community as it was then? Because parents rallied after the closure of the initial school and said, we want a public school here. Could you describe the community a bit more?
Yeah, well, it's a very diverse community. There are it is a place in parts of some affluence, absolutely, but also we have 5,500 public housing units in Albert Park. So I guess in one community you have some extreme wealth and extreme poverty in the same mix. So bringing that community together is quite an interesting challenge. And you're right. You're absolutely right that it was driven by a really strong and committed and passionate group of parents who wanted to see a really successful public school in their community. So this was a school that's future was driven by a really passionate group of local citizens, local residents.
To cut to the chase, were those private schools an option for many families? How steep were the fees?
The private schools, private schools' fees, they vary depending on whether it's one of the more elite private schools or there are a lot of mid-tier private schools in Australia now. But yes, many of the parents did have that option and did choose to move to the private system. But I can tell you, we have them back now. We have over 93% of the local community come to this school. So that was one of the challenges. How do you bring every single person? How do you get your entire community to commit to and to be passionate about the school that's the public school that's in your, you know, that's central to your community?
So your first day literally through the door, had there been a physical reconstruction to start with? Just take us back to day one.
Yeah, well, yes, it was a new build. So the school initially, when I started, it was simply a hole in the ground. It was a building under construction. And so we had to win community confidence by the power of our vision and the core values that we shared with our community. But when we opened on the first day of 2011, it was very much essentially an empty but beautiful new building. So we had to fit that building out over time. So it was a really interesting and challenging time from a design perspective and an interior design perspective, and looking at how do you create a school that is warm and welcoming and dynamic for the new parents and for the new kids that have committed to the school.
I mean, you were literally sitting in a borrowed desk in a corner of a neighbouring school with a waste paper basket and a slightly dodgy mobile phone, an administrative budget of 50 grand, quote unquote.
That is absolutely true, and so it's a very modest investment for a beautiful new school, I would have thought. But look, it was a great challenge on one level, because often in big institutions you're cocooned by committees, aren't you, and decisions are made with other people surrounding you. So the idea that you can work in splendid isolation and that you can be brave with your decision making and that you can create your own destiny to a large extent, it was a very exciting and innovative time. So I'm very glad that I had that opportunity. Sure, we could have done with some more resourcing up front, and I think that's a lesson for other schools that are opening, that you need to resource particularly the leaders of that school, the leadership of the schools, because they're the people who are building community confidence in the school. I think that's an important piece for future developments.
All schools begin with people. And where did you start, not just with the physical infrastructure and what was going to go where and how you were going to get the funds for it? Where did you start with this community and its people?
Well, the first thing was just simply to walk the community, to walk and talk and meet people within the community, to talk to some of the key stakeholders who had been activists for opening up the school again. When it came to the actual enrolments, we met with every single parent and every single student that we enrolled in the first year of the school. So we built trust with the foundation students and the foundation parents from day one. We built relationships with them from day one. And many of them are still active in the school today. And many of them became leaders in the school, school council presidents, for example, their first school captains. So building that trust and belief in the schools is absolutely critical. The other element is to go out and be strategic about the relationships that you build with important institutions within the community, and looking outward, looking beyond the school gates. That's a really important component as well.
In your book, you recount a meeting with the principal of a primary school, a feeder school nearby, and you asked, "How many of your students am I likely to get enrolled at my new school?" Her reply was pretty confronting.
That's absolutely right. She was clear that absolutely no students would enroll in the school. So that was quite a confronting moment at that time, and it made you I guess it made me work much more passionately to make sure that I could convince people to actually enroll in the school. But you know what I think really convinced people to enroll was we had an absolutely clear vision about what we wanted to do and what we wanted to be, and we're really strong in terms of our values, really strong about what we would stand for as a school. And so people, it gave people the confidence to commit to the school. And then of course we invested heavily in that first group. We knew that they would lead other students and lead community perceptions, so we had to really invest in our foundation group of students in particular, and to make sure they displayed great leadership qualities, great values, and also that they achieved great academic success. So that initial investment is so critical.
So how many foundation students were there? By the old school, the end of the old school, I think only 6% of local families were choosing it. They were often, but simply didn't have the means for the private schools. So how many foundation pupils did you have in the new school?
Now, the anticipated enrolment was simply 75 students, but we doubled that. We started with 150 students in the first year, and now we have 1,016 staff. And now today we have 1,600 students and over 200 staff. So it's been quite a journey.
Sure has. The passion in those first few public meetings as you tried to build the individual support, an interesting part of the book is how much this school was about people, but also about community. Because what happened as the crowd dispersed in those first few meetings? You had a lot of parents come to you saying what?
Well, the parents simply, look, in essence, they said, "How can I help?" And it was such a powerful affirmation, such a powerful message. How can we contribute to this? How can we make it happen? And I think there's a lot of debate about, you know, the parent school divide, but if we can just be united, just be strong in our belief that public schools are critical for our society's future, and if we can work together in that sort of with that sort of passion and commitment, you can achieve so much, because everyone in every school community have wonderful people who can offer so much enrichment, so much joy to a school setting. So it was a very, very powerful message from those public meetings that took place.
You had people in business and architecture and property management and communications. You had a high-end restaurant chef who ended up giving cookery masterclasses to students. There's a lesson in all this, isn't it? Isn't there? In that as institutions, we can become set in ways and almost that there's not really the open space for that kind of involvement. You were starting with a blank canvas and it was like, sure, what can you do for us?
Absolutely. The chef, incidentally, was Ben Shuri of New Zealand background. He'd made a great contribution in designing one of the campuses that we built over time. But yes, I do think you have to be open. You have to be open to possibility, don't you? You have to, like, symbolically, we're a school without fences. We open ourselves to the community. The school itself is built onto the streetscape. So as you walk by, you can look into the school. And then over subsequent years, we've built four more additional campuses. And so our kids move within and across the community each day. So I think that's one of the most unique aspects of the school.
He is a star, Ben Shirey. Our guest is Stephen Cook, no coincidence, who is talking about his experience with Albert Park College 11 years after beginning right from scratch as a brand new school, the previous school having quote-unquote failed. Albert Park College was voted Australian School of the Year. You're listening to 9 to Noon on NZ National. Having convinced the community to give you a go, you also recount a meeting with the recount in the book the idea of the values of this school, and you were trying to create a high performing, high achieving school regardless of socioeconomic profile, right? You were determined to set certain standards and have certain values. Can you explain how that was received? Again, how it was conveyed and how it was received?
Well, it's got to be embedded in the DNA of your school, doesn't it? I mean, it's explicit on your website. It's the overriding message in every public event that you do, at every assembly that you run with students. It's built into your e-newsletter and so on it goes. And for us, you know, the number one key value for me is always around positivity, you know, the art of the possible, having a can-do attitude. So positivity is number one for me. And I think that's reflected in the culture of the school. There's a tremendous sense of staff trust and belief in each other. And that comes from that positive attitude, a culture of respect. Because if you don't have a calm and orderly learning environment, if people don't respect each other, then you can't really run a successful school. And then that piece around a culture of excellence, really always striving to be the absolute best that you can be. So they're sort of three core values that we built the school around, and I think they still resonate today.
We are having a debate right now, literally today, over what has happened to in primary schools, right? To students' learning and ability with literacy and with mathematics, and that therefore flows on into high school as well. And a lot of debate about the way we have taught literacy in particular, and there is a bit of a back-to-basics argument happening right now. What is your view on the fundamentals? Does there need to be a fundamentals versus encouraging creativity, encouraging individuality, working with each child where they are at? I appreciate you're at college level, secondary level. A lot of what we're discussing today is based in the primary schools. But where would you base your philosophy?
Well, this is a very, very interesting debate, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to deny that people obviously need basic literacy and numeracy skills, but I would say, is that our ambition for education? Is that our ambition for our society? And I would think not. I think we want to create a clever society, an innovative, agile society. And to do that, you cannot simply focus on basic literacy and numeracy. You have to reach for the stars, do you not? You have to challenge and energize and excite students about learning. And you certainly, and indeed the professionals that lead them. I don't think many teachers are going to be incredibly excited about doing base level work with students for their career. So I think if we think about the sort of society we want, we have to move into the space of creativity, innovation, high interpersonal skills, the really challenging aspects of education. And I know on one level there, it's a little harder to measure, but it's an incredibly exciting and innovative space. And think about those students that we will rely on to sustain our society. And I think we need to concentrate on that.
What were the darkest moments of this journey, Stephen? Were there some where you thought this is just not going to work?
I always had confidence that it would work. And I suppose I had the experience, and I talk about this a bit in the book in my earlier career, of making quite a few mistakes, because along the way you learn and grow. So I suppose I had that background. But there was one moment when we first, prior to opening the school, we thought we originally had 150 students in, I think, November of the previous year. But then when the enrolment forms rolled in, we only had about 70. And so I had that moment, that dark moment, I guess, where you think, my goodness, maybe this will not work. But as it transpired on the opening day, on the 1st of February 2011, we had 150 students. And their parents, and we had a wonderful opening day.
It's a pretty rare opportunity, isn't it, to start a brand new school?
Oh, it's an absolute privilege. It's an absolute privilege, and the thing is, you can do things more quickly and in a more dynamic fashion. My previous school had over 100 years of history, a beautiful, traditional environment in which to work, and I did learn a lot in that setting. But there's no doubt that when you open a new school, you can really do innovative and creative work. With the one proviso, you must carry your community with you. You must be aligned. And I think this is a really important piece. You need to be aligned with their values, but you also need to know that they're consistent with your values. Because if you're not authentic, if people don't believe in the message that you're delivering, and indeed, if you don't deliver on it, then the community will lose confidence in the work you do. And I guess aligned with that, the symbolism of being a principal, being a leader, is really important. Just being aware of the influence you can have upon the community, and to respect that, and to honour the fact that people commit to you.
Thank you very much. That is Stephen Cook. His book is From the Ground Up. This is about his journey with Albert Park College. He came in as a principal of a brand new school, which at that stage had no buildings, furniture, staff or students, the previous one having been closed. 11 years later, Albert Park College was voted Australian School of the Year.